Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Phil Dierking, and Anna Mateo. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, Thai officials say four boys were brought out of a flooded cave in northern Thailand on Monday. A witness near the cave told the Reuters news agency that medical workers carried four people to emergency rescue vehicles. They will join four other boys who were rescued on Sunday. They had been trapped inside the Tham Luang cave for more than 2 weeks. Four other youngsters and their soccer coach are still inside. Rescue operations have halted for the night and will restart on Tuesday. Sunday night, teams of divers brought out four of the trapped boys to waiting ambulances. But officials waited several hours before confirming their rescue. Thai officials started the rescue operation on Sunday as weather experts predicted more rain in the coming weeks. Divers escorted the children, who wore equipment to help them breathe. Other divers were on guard along the dangerous first kilometer of the passageway. In some places, the boys had to be carried under flooded areas, some as narrow as 0.6 meters wide. Norangsak Osatanakon, head of the rescue operation, said a team of divers went back into the cave Monday morning, local time. He added that the divers were the same multinational team that rescued the four boys on Sunday. 13 foreign divers and 5 members of Thailand's Navy SEAL unit are taking part in the rescue operation. Last week, a former Thai Navy diver died while preparing for the operation. Narangsak would not identify the rescued boys. He said it was out of respect for the families whose sons are still trapped in the cave. He added, "They still need to be kept away from their parents and others due to fear about infection." Sampun Sompyongjai is the father of one of the 12 boys. He said, rescuers told the parents that the strongest children would be brought out first. He told Reuters, "We have not been told which child has been brought out. We can't visit our boys in hospital because they need to be monitored for 48 hours. I'm hoping for good news."
Severe flooding and landslides have killed at least 100 people in southwestern Japan. Rescuers searched for survivors in flooded areas and landslides after several days of heavy rain. Officials said dozens of people were missing. The severe rain caused rivers to overflow, in some cases covering whole towns. Some people escaped the water by climbing onto the top of their homes while waiting to be rescued by helicopter. Parts of southwestern Japan had up to 10 centimeters of rain per hour, the highest level in decades. In some areas, hills collapsed under the weight of water, causing deadly landslides that crushed homes and took out roads. Japanese officials said more than 73,000 emergency workers and troops were involved in search and rescue efforts. Thousands of homes were without clean water and electricity in the city of Hiroshima and other hard-hit areas. The rain finally lifted on Monday. It was replaced by sunny, hot conditions. Many people lined up to receive water in temperatures reaching 34 degrees Celsius. One of those lining up was Yumeko Matsui, whose home in Hiroshima had been without water since Saturday. "We cannot take baths, the toilet doesn't work, and our food stockpile is running low," the 23-year-old school worker said. She added that bottled water and tea were sold out in local stores. Seiji Toda told Japan's TBS television he was shocked and felt helpless when he saw that his restaurant in Hiroshima had been destroyed by a landslide. "I have never seen anything like this," Toda said, standing outside the eatery he opened 40 years ago. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe canceled a planned trip to Europe and the Middle East to oversee disaster activities. I'm Brian Lynn.
The polar bear may be the animal most identified with climate change, but it is far from the only creature at risk from rising temperatures. The northernmost part of Earth is warming 2 to 3 times faster than the rest of the planet. This means the melting sea ice is opening new routes for shipping. The melting ice has cleared space through the historically dangerous Northwest Passage and the Northern Sea Route along Russia's northern coast. This has sharply increased shipping in what was once a largely untouched ocean. Donna Hauser is a marine biologist with the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Hauser says she and other people expect more ships to sail in Arctic waters.
Part of what motivated the study is to understand where we're at and where we need to go.
Hauser says she was interested in studying the possible threat to Arctic marine mammals from shipping. Hauser says her hope was to protect both these animals and the people who depend on them. Hauser and other researchers looked at 7 Arctic species: beluga whales, narwhals, bowhead whales, ringed seals, bearded seals, walruses, and polar bears. They created a risk measure that combined the general sensitivity of these animals and their contact with shipping. The researchers limited their study to the month of September. This is when sea ice is at its lowest point and most ships pass through Arctic waters. The study found that narwhals and other whales were most at risk to ship traffic during the late summer. Polar bears were the least at risk, with walruses and seals in between. These findings did not surprise Randall Reeves, head of the Marine Mammal Commission Committee of Scientific Advisors. They, narwhals and belugas, are used to living in an extremely quiet world, he told VOA. Narwhals are at risk because they have more contact with ships in the Northwest Passage, which receives more shipping than the Northern Sea Route. This means they are the most at risk of all the Arctic marine mammals. Polar bears, however, seem to be the most ready to deal with shipping during September. In order to help protect marine animals, the researchers suggest requiring ships to move at slower speeds to reduce the chance of striking. I'm Phil Dierking.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Researchers say a virus, once feared around the world, can help to treat some kinds of cancer in the brain. The researchers are with the Duke University Health System in the American state of North Carolina. These doctors say they used genetically engineered poliovirus to treat people with an aggressive and deadly brain tumor. The survival rate for people with this form of cancer, called glioblastoma, is very low. They usually live no longer than 2 years after the disease is discovered. The brain tumors often return after they are treated the first time. The Associated Press notes that John McCain, a well-known member of the United States Senate, is being treated for a recurring glioblastoma. He was the Republican Party's candidate for president in 2008. The Duke University study involved 61 patients. They were chosen for a number of reasons, including the size of their tumor and its position in the brain. Of the 61 patients who got the treatment, 21% were alive 3 years later. That percentage may seem small, but not when you compare it with another group of brain tumor patients. They were not injected with the poliovirus. Only 4% of them were alive 3 years later. Annick Desjardins is one of the researchers. She helped to write a report about the study. She said not all patients react to the treatment. However, if they do, they often become long-term survivors. Stephanie Hopper was a patient in the Duke study. 8 years ago, tests showed she had glioblastoma. She had the tumor removed, but 2 years later it returned. So the 27-year-old woman joined the Duke study in May of 2012. Doctors injected a genetically engineered version of the poliovirus directly into her brain. After this treatment, Hopper's tumor shrunk. In fact, in images of her brain, doctors could hardly see the tumor. And it continues to get smaller. The Associated Press story says that the treatment has given Hopper a chance to finish college and become a medical aide. The AP story also explains why the doctors chose to use poliovirus. This virus attacks the nervous system and can cause paralysis, making the patient unable to control all or part of the body. The body's natural defenses against disease react very strongly to this attack. So doctors thought they could use this same response to fight the growth of cancer cells. Daryl Bigner was the lead writer of the report on the study. He explains that by changing the structure of the virus, it loses the ability to affect nerve cells.
But the virus still has the ability to kill cancer cells. In fact, the researchers found that the modified virus actually targeted the tumor cells.
What this did, very simply, was to destroy the ability of the poliovirus to infect nerve cells and cause poliomyelitis any longer, but it retained the ability to kill cancer cells.
The Duke researchers say they are hopeful with this new treatment. So they have started new tests. These tests combine the poliovirus with other approved cancer treatments, such as chemotherapy. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Anna Mateo.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. In recent programs, we talked about how the rise of fascist leaders in Europe threatened American neutrality in the 1930s. Adolf Hitler and the Nazi Party in Germany created the most obvious threat. But there was also Benito Mussolini in Italy and Francisco Franco in Spain. These leaders challenged both the idea of democracy and the security of some of America's closest allies. Hitler's invasion of Poland and the spread of war in Europe in 1939 made Americans wonder if they could remain neutral much longer. The United States would finally go to war against Hitler and the other Axis nations. But its first battle would not be in Europe at all. Instead, the United States would enter World War II following a surprise attack by Japan on the large American naval base at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. Relations between the United States and Japan had grown steadily worse throughout the 1930s. Both nations were important industrial powers, but they had very different ideas about the economic and political future of East Asia, especially China. Until the late 1800s, Japan had been a nation with ancient political traditions and little contact with the Western world. Visits by Commodore Matthew Perry and American warships helped open Japan to trade with the United States and other nations in the 1850s. And in the years that followed, Japan took major steps toward becoming a modern industrial nation. By the 1920s and 30s, Japan was a strong country, but it lacked oil, rubber, and other natural resources of its own. For this reason, Japanese political leaders looked with envy at the Dutch, French, and British colonies across Southeast Asia and the Pacific. And Japanese business leaders saw huge markets for their products in nearby countries like Korea and China. Japan's desire to use East Asia to gain natural resources and sell manufactured products was in direct conflict with American plans for Asia. This was especially true concerning China. Washington created an open-door policy toward China. It wanted to keep China's natural resources and markets free from control by Japan or any other nation. For this reason, Americans were very concerned when Japanese forces invaded the Manchuria area of China in 1931. and they watched with great interest the efforts of Chinese leader Chiang Kai-shek to oppose the Japanese invaders. The United States was also very concerned about protecting its imports of oil, tin, and rubber from Southeast Asia. This area of the world was a major supplier of these resources in the 1930s. The Middle East had not yet become a leading producer of oil. In these ways, the United States and Japan were competing for the same resources and Asian markets. However, there also was a good deal of trade between the two nations. In fact, Japan depended on the United States for most of its metal, copper, and oil. This trade with Tokyo became a major concern for President Franklin Delano Roosevelt and the Congress in 1937. In the summer of that year, more Japanese troops moved into China. They quickly captured much of the Chinese coast. Much of the metal, oil, and other materials that Japan used for its war effort in China came from the United States. Americans did not like selling Japan materials to use against China, but the trade was legal because of a 1911 agreement between Tokyo and Washington. However, the American government told Japan in 1939 that it would end the earlier agreement. It would no longer sell Japan materials that could be used for war. Washington's decision made the Japanese government think again about its expansionist plans, and the announcement a month later of a non-aggression treaty between Germany and the Soviet Union gave Tokyo even more cause for concern. The Soviet Union could be a major opponent of Japanese expansion in East Asia, and it appeared free from the threat of war in Europe. These two events helped moderates in the Japanese government to gain more influence over foreign policy. A moderate government took power in January 1940. However, this period of moderation in Tokyo did not last long. In the spring of 1940, Germany launched its Blitzkrieg, or lightning invasion of Europe. The Nazis captured Denmark, Norway, the Netherlands, Belgium, Luxembourg, and finally France. Extremists in the Japanese government saw the German victory as their chance to launch their own attack on European colonies in Asia. They quickly began negotiations with Hitler to form a new alliance, and within months, militant leaders overthrew the moderate government in Tokyo. The new Japanese government was headed by a moderate, Prince Konoye, but the Minister of War was an expansionist, General Tojo. Tokyo wasted no time in taking action. It forced France to give Japan permission to occupy northern Indochina. And Tokyo also demanded that Britain close the Burma Road to the Chinese city then known as Chungking. The Burma Road was a major route by which the United States was supplying China with munitions as part of the Lend-Lease Act. These events caused relations between Tokyo and Washington to become even worse. In the second half of 1940, President Roosevelt banned the export of metal and oil products to Japan. His administration also lent money to China. America began to supply Chiang Kai-shek's government with a fleet of P-40 fighter airplanes with volunteer pilots led by Army aviator Claire Chennault to train Chinese pilots. The squadron became known as the Flying Tigers. American representatives quietly began to meet with British and Dutch officials to discuss joint defense plans for possible Japanese attacks in the Western Pacific. Washington and Tokyo held long negotiations in 1941. The American officials hoped the negotiations might delay Japan from launching an attack to the south. They also thought that a delay might give more moderate leaders in Japan a chance to gain more influence. And, for a time, the American plan worked. Japan did not make new acts of aggression. Again, events in Europe caused this situation to change. Nazi Germany attacked the Soviet Union in the middle of 1941. This prevented Moscow from doing any fighting on its eastern borders, so Japanese troops were free to invade southern Indochina. President Roosevelt reacted to Japan's invasion of Indochina by taking three major steps. First, he took control of all Japanese money in the United States. Second, he brought the armed forces of the Philippines under American command. And third, he closed the Panama Canal to Japanese shipping. Once again, a conflict developed between moderates and extremists in the Japanese government. More moderate leaders, such as Prime Minister Konoye, urged one more effort to reach an agreement with the United States. But the Japanese Army and Navy believed that the time had come to go to war to end American and European power in East Asia forever. Negotiations between Japan and the United States continued through the final months of 1941, but the two nations were on the edge of war. They were as close to hostilities as Washington was with the Nazi government in Berlin. American military officials captured secret messages from Japan during this time. They learned that Tokyo was planning an attack of some kind unless the United States suddenly changed its policies. However, the American officials could not discover exactly where or how the attack would be made. Almost everyone in Washington expected that the Japanese would attack south of Japan. They were wrong. The military leaders in Tokyo were planning a surprise attack on America's main Pacific military base at Pearl Harbor.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.